Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Wednesday, November 24th, 2021. AISD will launch Certified Nurse Assistant Program thanks to Regional Hospital District Grant. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Alpine ISD will launch a Certified Nurse Assistant Program within Alpine High School, thanks in part to a grant from the Big Bend Regional Hospital District. The district recently announced a handful of grants for their upcoming fiscal year, and both the school and hospital districts expressed excitement at the prospect of adding more healthcare education options to the region. Beginning August 2022, the high school will add nursing science as a new endorsement within their Career and Technical Education, CTE, program. Students who pursue that path will have an opportunity to receive an industry-based certification, be prepared to take the Texas Nurse Aid exam, and then can enter the workforce as a CNA or opt to continue their education in a Bachelor of Science nursing program. To get the program off the ground, AISD will be using the grant funds to purchase medical equipment and hire a teacher that's fully dedicated to the program. The investment in the school will give students practical experience working with things they'll need to use in the career field. The hospital district grant is a total of $89,920 over 2 years, and the school has already established a sustainability plan to keep the program running and the salary funded after the grant funds have been spent. The hospital district every year budgets some money toward community grants, and Alpine ISD's grant proposal was part of that annual process to award annual monies to the community, said BBRHD Executive Director J.D. Newsom. The district submitted an application like other grant seekers and was approved by the hospital district board. Newsom was excited about the project, saying, "It's a unique program that I hope will help with some long-term solutions to really generate some homegrown workforce for medical providers. Finding sufficient medical staffing has been difficult in rural areas in recent years, and the pandemic has only exacerbated the need for qualified employees willing to work in remote areas like the Big Bend region. We're very grateful for the support of the BBRHD, and we're excited about how this can help our community at large," said AISD Superintendent Becky McCutcheon. While grants from the hospital district are often used to fund ambulances and medical equipment for healthcare providers in the area, Newsom said this project supports the BBRHD mission in a different way. "The hospital district does focus on indigent health care, but we do have a mandate to ensure there's a hospital system and access to medical care for our county residents in general," he said. Superintendent McCutcheon said the district has been pursuing a CNA program for a couple years because it fits with their CTE program, but also because there's such a big need for students to enter into the medical field, and we're trying to help fill that need. She said, "It's not just in our area. It's a nationwide need for nurses. If we can fill in at the lower level, they can enter into a BSN, an LVN, or RN program." Along with the AISD program, BBRHD's board approved grants for a variety of other expenditures. In another effort to help educate and train a local workforce, $21,845 will go to the Sol Ross State University's fledgling nursing program so that they can purchase equipment for a new simulation lab. The long-term goal with that simulation lab is that it will be primarily used to train those nursing students, but Sol Ross hopes and intends to open that simulation lab to EMS providers and other healthcare workers that need that extra training with the simulation equipment they'll be purchasing, Newsom explained. McCutcheon has already reached out to Sol Ross to talk about how their programs can interact with one another. Our ultimate hope is that our students will graduate high school as a CNA and move into the higher ed realm, even at Sol Ross, which has started their nursing program, the superintendent said. If there's some classes we can share, either our teacher with Sol Ross or theirs with us, we're always open to working with Sol Ross. The university already has a dual credit agreement with AISD, making the connection even easier. In other grants by BBRHD this fiscal year, the city of Marfa will receive $73,000 toward a new ambulance. Terlingua Consolidated School District will have $1,025 to spend on getting a doctor to visit the area to provide physicals for all students wanting to participate in sports. $12,000 will go to Sunshine House so they can purchase wheelchairs, shower stools, and other pieces of medical equipment for the elderly individuals they serve. Lastly, $10,000 will go to the Big Bend Citizens Alliance in Terlingua for an emergency medical fund for Terlingua residents that need help getting to the doctor. Newsom added, "I think the coolest one is for Alpine ISD. I think we're very excited to see how that goes. One of the biggest issues we have right now is having enough workforce to provide medical care, whether it's a doctor, nurse, or a certified nursing aide," said Newsom. "This is a piece of the puzzle, I think, that really works to provide that long-term sustainability for provision of health care." Blackwell's School Alliance makes strides toward federal recognition, launches fundraising campaign. By Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. It's been a busy week for the Blackwell School Alliance, a nonprofit that aims to protect and preserve the Blackwell School, Marfa's former segregated school for Mexican-American students. News broke last Wednesday that a bill to make the Blackwell School a National Park Service unit had cleared the House Natural Resources Committee and was on its way to the House floor. "I am thrilled to see the House take this critical step towards giving the Blackwell School the proper recognition it deserves," Congressman Tony Gonzalez, who represents the Big Bend in the House, said in a press release. The Blackwell School dates back to 1909, when an adobe schoolhouse was constructed on the corner of Abbott and Waco Streets in Marfa. For almost 60 years, Blackwell School educated Mexican-American elementary students separately from their white neighbors, well past the Supreme Court's 1954 Brown versus Board of Education of Topeka decision that ended legal segregation of public schools. Many Marfa residents today have ties to the school, either as someone who attended or a relative of someone who did. The project to make Blackwell School a National Park Service unit began when the Alliance's board president, Gretel Enck, ran into former Congressman Will Hurd at a coffee shop in Alpine. Heard gave Inc. the tools to connect with the National Parks Conservation Association, an organization that supports the National Park Service through fundraising and lobbying. Inc. was introduced to representatives in Texas and Washington, D.C., where Blackwell's story was met with curiosity and urgency. They were without hesitation, like, "We're blown away that this site even exists." That's how it really started, getting that outside view, she explained. Inc. began to understand just how unique the Blackwell School's offerings were as the organization applied for a listing on the National Register of Historic Places. Though de facto segregated schools for Mexican-American students were common throughout the borderlands, only Blackwell had been preserved and open to the public. In 2013, the National Park Service Advisory Board conducted the American Latino Heritage Theme Study to help smaller organizations like the Blackwell School to determine the national relevance of Latino-related places and collections and apply for federal recognition. A key part of the study examined Latino and Mexican-American struggles for equal educational access, suggesting that the National Park Service was aware of the significance of these segregated schools, but didn't yet have a corresponding site. Our folks have always thought of the Blackwell School as an important personal and local story, Inc. explained. National parks are known for these big, glorious natural areas, like Big Bend and the Guadalupe Mountains. That's one function of the Park Service. But the Park Service also serves as America's storyteller. No one else is telling this story. The Blackwell School's bill will be bundled into an Omnibus Lands Act before it is officially offered up to the House and Senate for consideration. Omnibus bills include a variety of legislation that are extensively vetted and deliberated over before voting begins. So while it may be a while before the full bill hits the floor, it's unlikely to be politically contentious. This particular omnibus bill will also include measures to protect a former internment camp for Japanese Americans in Colorado and to expand the Casa Grande Ruins National Monument, a critical Native American heritage site in Arizona. Another hurdle the Blackwell School must clear to become a National Historic Site is transferring ownership of the property to the National Park Service. Currently, the Alliance holds a 99-year lease on the land from the Marfa Independent School District, so it would need to purchase the property from the school district before donating it to the National Parks Service. Thanks to Marfa's real estate boom, the value of the land underneath the schoolhouse has ballooned in recent years. Inc. and her fellow board members hope that a sale of the land from the school district to the Alliance down the road will help support current-day Marfa students. While the board waits for the final federal rubber stamp, they're launching a fundraising campaign to help protect the structure. Critical updates include an Americans with Disabilities Act compliant entrance and bathroom and a replastering of the adobe with lime. They also hope to expand and improve their interpretive offerings. The Blackwell School has artifacts that span class rings and letterman jackets to report cards and photographs, but the collections are currently minimally interpreted, Inc. says. We really need to involve some professionals on that level to figure out how best to create a museum experience that is going to honor the authenticity of what we have and use all of that to create meaningful connections. The Blackwell School Alliance has already received sizable donations from the Dixon Water Foundation and the city of Marfa through hotel and occupancy tax revenue, but hopes that smaller dollar donations from locals will help the community foster a sense of investment in the project. Our community has proven to be very generous, and everyone should have a chance to put their name on this project, Inc. said. Gains in the fundraising campaign and positive news from Capitol Hill have provided the Alliance with lots of forward momentum. But board members haven't lost sight of their most important mission, preserving and protecting living history in Marfa. Protecting the Blackwell School and its many stories is vital to ensuring we continue to learn about our nation's complex history from many perspectives, especially those that have historically been obscured, board member and Blackwell School descendant Daniel Hernandez said in a press release. For many Blackwell alumni living today, and countless others who have passed over the years, making this place a national park site would be a tremendous moment of validation that's been in the making for generations. Driver, passenger, crew survive collision of vehicle and train at railroad crossing west of Marfa. Photo by Abby Perot. An accident Friday morning at the railroad crossing west of Marfa city limits resulted in damage to a city vehicle, but the passengers, Chuck Salgado and his young son, managed to escape the crash with minor injuries. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. A freight train struck a vehicle at the railroad crossing west of Marfa city limits on Friday morning, injuring two. The vehicle driver, Marfa resident and city employee Chuck Salgado, now faces a charge for failing to yield right-of-way at railroad crossing, according to the Texas Department of Public Safety. A little before 8 a.m., Salgado was on his way to drop off his 9-year-old son at Marfa Elementary School when they approached the railroad intersection at West Washington Street, north of the cemeteries. Salgado recounted, "Sun glare did contribute to us crossing. I looked both ways and couldn't see anything through the sun. I also never heard a train horn, not once." Alfredo Chavez saw it all unfold from his car on the north side of the tracks. Chavez, an assistant manager at Porter's, had been driving on the dirt road railroad easement that runs parallel to the tracks when his wife in the passenger seat warned him to watch out for the oncoming train. He looked in his driver's side mirror, saw the headlights of the train, came to a stop, and watched as Salgado began crossing the tracks. Salgado, driving a 2019 white Chevrolet Silverado marked City of Marfa Public Works, made it halfway across the tracks before the freight train slammed into the right side of the truck bed, spinning the driver and his son in a full circle and pushing them through a railroad crossing sign before they came to a stop. Thank goodness that he passed across the tracks enough that it got him in the tail, Chavez said in the aftermath of the event. Chavez and his wife called 911 multiple times until their phones connected and exited their vehicle to render aid, but Salgado and his son were already climbing out of the truck. We were able to go ahead and let them sit in our vehicle until the cops and everybody else showed up, Chavez explained. Our vehicle became somewhat of a little safe haven, if you will, because they were both in shock. Marfa Police Department, Marfa Fire Department, Marfa EMS, Presidio County Sheriff's Office, DPS troopers, city employees, and Marfa ISD employees all arrived to the scene, rendering aid, inspecting those involved in the incident, photographing the scene, or providing comfort to Salgado and the young boy. Salgado reported chest pains, and his son showed an abrasion under right eyebrow and a bruised shoulder. Both were transferred to Big Bend Regional Medical Center in Alpine and released. But Salgado went to University Medical Center of El Paso later in the afternoon after having trouble breathing, he said. He was released that night and on Monday said, "We're both recovering well and resting." Union Pacific Senior Manager of Communications Mike Jackson confirmed that the train crew was not injured. Through the rest of the morning and afternoon, the train remained exactly where it had come to a stop after the accident. The locomotive was blocking Mesa Street Railroad crossing and caused other trains that routinely passed through the area to be delayed, where they remained parked along the railways east and west of the accident before finally clearing in the evening. DPS and Union Pacific are both investigating the accident. It is uncertain whether the city-owned vehicle was totaled in the accident, with City Manager Mandy Roan saying, "We're not going to comment on personnel matters. We're not going to comment on the incident at all." Chavez, a witness to the accident, said that when he was driving parallel to the tracks as he approached West Washington Street, he'd heard the rumbling of tracks as the train barreled forward. But he made it clear that he had not heard a whistle prior to the train entering the West Washington Street intersection, echoing what Salgado had said of the incident. UP spokesperson Jackson explained Union Pacific's policy on the matter, saying, "Federal regulation, and thus Union Pacific policy as well, requires locomotive horns be sounded before entering all public grade crossings." The West Washington intersection, which does not have a crossing gate with arms, has been the site of two accidents between vehicles and trains in the past 2 years. Last year, a teenager with a learner's permit drove a white Maserati onto the tracks at the intersection, and an oncoming train crushed the front of the vehicle, but left the three vehicle occupants unscathed. The intersection lies just west of Marfa's city limits, leaving its configuration up to the responsibility of Presidio County. The decision about the type of warning device belongs to the road authority, state, county, or city, depending on who is responsible for the road, not Union Pacific, Jackson said. Installation and maintenance of the warning device is the responsibility of the railroad. All I know is I'm glad that the people that were involved were okay, including the person in the train, considering it could have been worse, said Chavez, the witness. Thank God that the driver of that vehicle and the child are okay. After surviving the harrowing event, Salgado said this week, "We are recovering and will be especially thankful this Thanksgiving." Forthcoming power line improvements stir up concerns in Sal Cepuedes neighborhood. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, American Electric Power, AEP, Texas, is in the early planning stages of an improvement project to upgrade electric transmission lines that connect Marfa to Fort Davis. Updates to the system will involve the Alamito Creek substation in the Sal Cepuedes neighborhood, just outside of Marfa, and flow north, ending at a substation in Fort Davis. Pre-existing wooden poles, which are nearly 100 years old, will be replaced by new, more durable galvanized steel poles. The improvements are vital for the future of Fort Davis power supply. That substation in Sal Cepuedes is kind of a hub. That line that goes to Fort Davis is the only source of power for Fort Davis, so that's really why it's important for us to rebuild that line, just for the sake of reliability, said Michael Harris, project specialist with AEP. The Alamito Creek substation connects not only to Fort Davis, but Presidio, Alpine, and another substation in Marfa, causing poles and lines to extend in all directions within the South Sepoitas neighborhood. Located just outside of Marfa city limits east of town, South Sepoitas is a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood and consists of a mixture of traditional homes, mobile homes, and trailers. Many residents have existing easements on their property, which extend 100 feet off center line or 50 feet on either side of the transmission line, a safety consideration which also allows AEP the right of access to maintain and operate the line. In a town hall hosted online November 9th by AEP, some residents of the South Sepoitas neighborhood and other stakeholders expressed their concerns about the improvements and how they would affect the residential area. According to AEP, replacing the aging poles will reduce the frequency and duration of outages. The effort will help stabilize the area's power grid, which, like the rest of the state, has been of higher public concern since last year's brutal winter storm. Steel poles can also withstand harsher conditions like ice and wind compared to wooden poles. The project will involve decommissioning the old route and creating a new route for the transmission lines. Current poles run adjacent to Texas State Highway 17. New routes could follow a similar path or divert through areas further east and west of the highway, passing near the Marfa Airport or residential areas like Mono Prieto. The replacement line will be built to 138 kV specifications, but will continue to operate at its current capacity of 69 kV. Should the need arise, the flexibility will make upgrading in the future easier. The preliminary routes and more project information can be found on AEP's website, https://aeptransmission.com/texas/Alamito Creek-Fort Davis/. AEP will present route options to the Public Utility Commission, PUC, who is in charge of greenlighting the project before any work can begin. AEP will send the proposal to the PUC for review and approval in early 2022 and begin construction as early as fall 2024, according to their schedule posted online. During the town hall meeting earlier this month, participants questioned whether the new lines could be buried underground, whether old easements would be terminated, and if upgrades would increase the electrical hum already being emitted from the station. Periods for public comment are a requirement for a project of this scale and will help AEP get approval from the PUC for the project. AEP is required by law to notify landowners of discussion opportunities if their property lies within 300 feet of any proposed routes. To get the word out about the first meeting, AEP sent notices to landowners using publicly available tax parcel IDs. AEP's project outreach specialist, Harris, said one of the biggest concerns that came out of the meeting was that AEP was not doing enough to address the Spanish-speaking population in the area. That's been a big point of emphasis in the 2 weeks since we held that town hall to get a lot of our materials translated into Spanish, said Harris. Harris apologized for the oversight and explained translated materials are being added to the project website. He said AEP Spanish-speaking staff can also be made available to the public, including members of their right-of-way crew who oversee construction work and members of the regulatory group. Potential beautification of the Alameda Creek substation was also a topic of discussion at the town hall. The substation itself will not undergo significant improvements, but has been updated in the recent past. Harris said AEP will weigh the financial and logistical feasibility of beautification, but right now, nothing is off the table. I think right now there's just a lot of discussion about, well, what could we do? What would that look like? Said Harris. Shelley Bernstein, executive director of Big Bend Conservation Alliance, called into the meeting and has since reached out to AEP to offer assistance with spreading awareness about the project in Sal Si Puedes. Several people who attended the meeting surfaced the need for public notices and informational materials in Spanish, and that more neighborhood outreach to the Sal Si Puedes neighborhood was needed, said Bernstein. Big Bend Conservation Alliance has subsequently written to AEP offering to assist with community outreach so all members of the Marfa community, especially those living in Sal Si Puedes, have a chance to understand the project's impacts and be heard. Robert Halpern, a Sal Si Puedes resident of 21 years, whose property will be affected by the upgrades, participated in the town hall and said the residents present were not representative of Sal Si Puedes population, with more white English-speaking residents represented than Hispanic or Spanish-speaking populations. Halpern said residents new to the area may not be aware they can push back against such a large, powerful entity as AEP. I could see a little reticence on their part to join if Spanish is their primary language and these are their early years in the United States and they don't know you can talk back nicely to a big company, said Halpern. He said he plans to reach out to his neighbors to spread awareness about the improvement project and hopes others do the same. Halpern expressed a desire to learn more about the pre-existing infrastructure in the area, like the current routes of all the power lines and which ones may change. But the idea of more electric lines and steel poles popping up in an already infrastructure-crowded area is distressing, said Halpern. We just have a ton of infrastructure and we don't want more, said Halpern. Architect and Sal Si Puedes resident of over 15 years, Stephen Chick Rayburn, said previous updates to the lines in the area were shocking and made the environment feel less inhabitable. The sheer size difference between the homes and power lines, which can be up to 85 feet tall and 8 feet wide, degrades property values, said Rayburn. It's the drastic jump in scale in the direct proximity of dwellings that I think is most problematic for AEP at this point, said Rayburn. Much of the damage is already done, but we want to work with AEP to reduce the number and size of any new transmission poles in the neighborhood to the bare minimum. Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. Local COVID-19 booster shot availability, an overview, by Mary Cantrell, mkcantrell at bigbendsentinel.com. Tri-County. Those due for their COVID-19 booster shots have many options in the Tri-County area, though clinics vary in days and times they offer the immunization. The Big Bend Sentinel has compiled this non-exhaustive list of current booster availability, which is subject to change. To be eligible to receive the booster shot, individuals must have received their first two doses of either the Moderna or Pfizer vaccine, with the second dose being administered at least 6 months ago. For those who received the single-dose Johnson & Johnson vaccine, they are eligible for the booster 2 months after their initial vaccination. While there are booster shots available for Pfizer, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccines, local clinics may not have all three available. The CDC allows for the mixing of different brands of the vaccine. While COVID-19 vaccinations have recently been approved by the CDC for children ages 5 to 11, booster doses have not yet been approved for anyone under the age of 18. All booster shots are free to receive, regardless of the location, but some locations may ask for proof of insurance or a form of ID for reporting purposes. The authorizations and availability of each booster has come at a time when the world is once again facing a new variant of the coronavirus, which the World Health Organization dubbed Omicron on Friday. The vaccine and BITS boosters are key preventatives against contracting and spreading the virus that has been impacting the world since early 2020. The Marfa Country Clinic will be administering both the Pfizer and Moderna boosters this Friday, December 3rd, from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. at their location on 105 East Oak Street. Moderna boosters will be given in the morning and Pfizer in the afternoon. Patients must have an appointment to receive a booster. To schedule a booster shot, call 432-729-3000. The clinic asks that people wear masks and bring their proof of vaccination cards. The Texas Department of State Health Services is offering Moderna and Pfizer booster shots in Alpine, Marfa, and Presidio. The Alpine Clinic, located at 205 North Cockrell Street, will have boosters available Mondays from 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Proof of vaccination cards are required. Making an appointment is recommended, but walk-ins are also welcome. Call 432-837-3877 to schedule an appointment. To get the booster in Marfa, visit 205 East El Paso Street, Thursdays from 9 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Call 432-729-5045 to make an appointment in Marfa. Presidio residents can get the booster Tuesdays from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 701 Beaumar Avenue. To schedule an appointment in Presidio, call 432-229-1540. Preventative Care Health Services, PCHS, is offering the Moderna booster shot in Alpine at its Family Health Services of Alpine location at 1605 Fort Davis Highway on Tuesdays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Appointments, proof of vaccination cards, and masks are required. The clinic is also offering the Pfizer vaccine for children ages 5 to 11 Tuesdays from 3 to 5 p.m. To schedule an appointment, call 432-837-4555. PCHS's Marfa location, also called the Marfa Community Health Clinic, is also offering the Moderna booster Tuesdays from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at their location on 406 South Summer Street. Vaccination cards are required, and making an appointment ahead of time is preferred and can be made by calling 432-837-4555, extension 302. The PCHS Presidio location, or Presidio County Medical Clinic, is offering the Moderna booster Mondays from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. They are also offering the Pfizer vaccination for kids Fridays from 3 to 5 p.m. Appointments are recommended. Call 432-229-3030. Highland Drug in Alpine has all three brands of the booster available every day. No appointment is needed. They are open from 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, but offer boosters up until 5 p.m. most days. They are open Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon and stop offering boosters around 11:30 a.m. Children's Pfizer vaccines will be available Saturdays. Proof of vaccination card is recommended but not required. Call 432-837-3931 to get available times. Prescription Shop Alpine has both Pfizer and Moderna booster shots available every Friday from 9 a.m. to noon, then 1:30 to 5:45 p.m. They are closed for lunch. Calling ahead to book a time slot is preferred but not required. Proof of vaccination card is required. Proof of insurance or some form of ID may be requested for reporting purposes. Call 432-837-3498. Mammos on the Move Mobile Mammogram Service returns to Big Bend by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Tri-County. The Big Bend Regional Hospital District is once again partnering with El Paso's Desert Imaging to bring a mobile mammogram unit to the region. The Mayo Clinic recommends that women begin yearly mammogram screenings for breast cancer at age 40. Prevention is the key word here, said Maria Urias, senior patient advocate at the Presidio County Medical Clinic. When cancer... When cancer is detected at an early stage, that can save a life. Though the mobile unit can only assist one or two patients at a time, it's a relatively speedy procedure. I've heard that you're in and out in 20 to 30 minutes, she said. Desert Imaging's team is bilingual and ready to assist first-timers who may not be familiar with the mammogram process. Patients with abnormal results will be sent to Midland or El Paso for further testing. Mammogram screenings are covered under most types of insurance as a preventative healthcare service, but patients worried about covering the $145 out-of-pocket cost are encouraged to reach out to their local branch of the Big Bend Regional Hospital District for assistance. In Presidio, that number is 432-229-2151. And in Alpine, it's 432-837-7051. We can do lots of things to assist, Uria said. If you can't come to the office, we'll find a way to get you an application. Desert Imaging does not require a referral from a physician in order to see a patient, so those interested can call and self-refer for an exam. To make an appointment, call Desert Imaging at 915-577-0100. At that number, those interested can also be pre-screened to see if you qualify for a non-insured program or a grant from Desert Imaging. South County residents should be advised that there will be only one day for local testing. High demand in Alpine led the Mammos on the Move team to reschedule one of their previously announced Presidio dates. Testing will be held at the Presidio Activity Center, PAC, on December 6th from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Alpine residents can sign up for appointments held on December 7th to December 9th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Big Bend Regional Medical Center. Marfa screenings will be held outside the Presidio County Courthouse from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. on December 10th.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, December 2nd, 2021. Annual Christmas Parade returns this Friday, by Nathan Heuer. The annual Christmas Parade is set to be back in Fort Stockton. The yearly event will be held on Friday, December 3rd, starting at 6:30 p.m. The parade will start on Rio Street and head east on Dickinson before finishing on Main Street at Zero Stone Park. This year's parade will be tied into the Christmas Night on the Town, an initiative organized by the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce that promotes local shopping and dining. I think the biggest push is telling people the benefits of shopping local. When people shop local, not only does it benefit your local store, it employs people in our community. It creates sales tax revenue, which enables a city to operate. There are a lot of residual benefits by shopping local, Fort Stockton EDC Director Rebbe Ramos said. She emphasized that supporting local store has translated to growth of those businesses, whether it be services provided or merchandise available. If you support what is here, then you see more growth, he said. It's hard to justify growing their business when you're not selling what you have. The Fort Stockton EDC and the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce will highlight goods and services available in the parade on their float with a variety of poster boards that are categorized. Categories include clothing, toys, tools, home decor, appliances, and gift cards. The theme for the parade is All I Want for Christmas is Something Local. For an updated list of businesses open late or offering specials during or after the parade, please visit fortstockton.org. Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, November 25th, 2021. Data Center set to bring in 50 jobs, by Megan Waring. The county has its eyes set on bringing in another data center, which would boost economic development and community growth. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court approved a resolution establishing the Mojave Reinvestment Zone and a tax abatement agreement with Fort Blocks LLC, a subsidiary of Cormant Data Systems, for a data hosting and distribution facility at their regular meeting on November 22nd. The tract of land is adjacent and to and part of the Sherbino Wind Farm off Interstate 10. For a 20-year period, the developer would be responsible for a payment in lieu of taxes pilot in the amount of $193,953.14 beginning in 2024, according to the tax abatement agreement. In the year 2023, the payment will be $290,929.71. Cormant is a Bitcoin mining operator that works to support renewable energy. The company installed the first commercial Bitcoin miner in Pecos County in May 2021. Our business is primarily focused on finding low-cost sources of power and using those to power our servers inside whatever facilities we can find, said Jamie McCavity, co-founder of Cormant. Our firm developed a technology that allowed us to deploy the computer equipment in hotter environments, and our technology essentially keeps it cool without using any excess water. The technology was specifically designed to target places that have a power market dynamic like the one that exists in Pecos County. There are a lot of generation products like solar and wind in the area. The transition that is built to get out to large users of power is not adequate to support the supply that is currently being created. We will buy power, and it will alleviate that congestion for all of those energy generation projects here and increase demand. New jobs will come with the data center. The contract agreement requires a total of 50 full-time equivalent positions with a minimum of 33 living in Pecos County. There are other data centers being built, said Randy Ramos, EDC director. I think the market is going to become competitive for this type of employment. We want to make sure we protect our interests, but at the same time allow for the project to succeed. The project is only starting out with 50 job positions because they are based on the existing transmission capacity. There are certain variables that are out of our control as we continue to invest in the project. Bringing in another data center will ultimately provide the opportunity for the city and the county to grow. They are actively trying to hire one of their management pieces out of Houston, and his wife is an educator. We know the shortfall of the school districts are trying to attract new educators. Hopefully, these 50 jobs bring spouses. They could be prison guards, they could be teachers, or they could be waitresses, for all we know. The anticipated completion date for construction of the project is by December 31st, 2022. Water well okayed for MPGCD by Nathan Heuer. The Midland-Pecos Groundwater Conservation District will soon gain more insight on water quality and water depth near the Comanche Springs area. MPGCD received approval to drill a water well near the Pecos County Water Improvement No. 1 office at the Fort Stockton City Council meeting on November 22nd. The water well, which will be approximately 375 feet deep, will be used for educational and monitoring purposes. The biggest benefit will be for educational purposes, Ty Edwards, Pecos County Water Improvement District 1 General Manager, said. It'll monitor water levels and water quality in the aquifer close to the spring. The well will show how water levels change over time and when the springs are flowing, how that equates to water wells in that well. Drilling will begin next month and is estimated to be done before the new year. In addition to the well, the site will also feature an 8-foot aero motor windmill that will stand directly above the well due to a generous donation by a local rancher. We're going to erect that windmill above the monitoring of the well. We're going to put a sign on it to bring more attention to where our office is. The site will have full-time monitoring equipment that will show readings 24/7. The data may also be found online on the district's website.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, November 25th. Gonzalez indicted on 2011 aggravated sexual assault of child. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Monahan's man was indicted on a charge of aggravated sexual assault of a child, a first-degree felony, a crime which allegedly happened in 2011. Jimmy Ray Gonzalez, age 41, of 605 South Kenneth Street, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on November 17th after he was indicted on November 12th by the Ward County Grand Jury of the 143rd Judicial Court, charging him with aggravated sexual assault. There are two elements that make a sexual assault case aggravated, the victim being under the age of 14, and the use of threats, force, weapons, or drugs. The indictment stems from an outcry that was made of a sexual assault which occurred approximately 10 years ago. According to Monahan's Police Department Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, Lieutenant Jeremy Kynes met with a 17-year-old female victim on July 2nd who stated she was sexually assaulted by Jimmy Gonzalez in 2011. The victim said the assault occurred more than once, end quote. The indictment stated that in July of 2011, Gonzalez did intentionally force sexual intercourse of a juvenile victim who was under the age of 14 at the time of the offense. Through the investigation, an arrest warrant was obtained charging Gonzalez with sexual assault of a child. There is no statute of limitations for sexual assault of a child in Texas. Gonzalez was known to the family of the victim. Gonzalez was also booked on driving while license invalid with previous conviction, a Class B misdemeanor, and failure to appear on the charge possession of a controlled substance under 1 gram in a drug-free zone. Bond was set at $3,000 for the driving while license invalid charge and $100,000 for the failure to appear on possession of controlled substance charge. If convicted, Gonzalez could face between 2 and 20 years imprisonment and or a fine of up to $10,000. Mexican national found guilty of marijuana distribution. A federal jury in Pecos convicted a Mexican national for his role in distributing marijuana November 18th. According to court documents and evidence presented at trial, Tomas Herrera Quinones, age 33, and 6 other co-defendants were charged with 1 count of conspiracy to possess with intent to distribute marijuana and 1 count of possession of over 100 kilograms of marijuana. A federal jury found Herrera guilty of both counts. Herrera faces a maximum penalty of 20 years in prison on each count and is scheduled for sentencing in March of 2022. 6 co-defendants, all from Mexico, have pleaded guilty in this case. They are scheduled for sentencing in January and February. U.S. Attorney Ashley C. Hoff of the Western District of Texas and Drug Enforcement Administration Acting Special Agent in Charge Greg Milland made this announcement. The DEA is investigating the case. Assistant U.S. Attorneys Lance Kennedy and Scott Greenbaum are prosecuting the case.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.